Well, welcome to Crossroads today, whatever site you might happen to be in, whatever coffee shop, whatever house that you may be meeting in. It is really great to be with you today. And today, I'm going to talk about what may be the most important topic in your life. It may be the most painful topic in your life. We're starting off a series today on family. And before I tell you why I say those things, let's just open up our time in prayer. God, you are a good God. That song that we sing every once in a while says that you are a good father. I believe you are, but many of us don't know that. No, don't know you that way, because we don't have family situations or father situations that give us a glimpse of how beautiful family is or how good you are. So I pray that no matter where we are in our family background, our family present, or our family future, you would build into us today and you would help me to be helpful for these your children. And I pray these things according to the character and identity of Jesus. Amen. Well, I way under talk family. In fact, truth be told, I think Crossroads way under talks family. Let me tell you maybe a little bit why it was. The church that I came from to come to Cincinnati to help start Crossroads was all about family all the time. This was back in the early 90s, late 80s, and like it was all family this, family this, family. It was like Christendom, American Christendom for a season was utterly hijacked, and all it was about was family. Family this, family, family, family. To the point where if you weren't married by the age of 22, you would feel like there was something wrong with you. To the point of if you would actually have a talk in church about how to be single, that was like radical. Like, my gosh, why would you talk about that in church? To the point of if you happen to have been divorced, if you happen to have had any blemish in your family history, you didn't fit. You didn't, not only did you not feel like you didn't fit, but really you didn't fit. And so when Crossroads started, I really had a desire to sort of step away from that, step away and push that sort of bifurcation of church culture away. And at the same time, I recognized there was so much pain, so much difficulty in our culture around family that to talk about family is to dredge up all kinds of difficulty, all kinds of pains. It's to dredge up issues that we really wish we didn't have in our life. And there's basically three reasons. We've never been in a healthy family, many of us, or we're currently, some of us are right now currently trying to build a healthy family. It's a second kind of person versus those of us who've never been in a healthy family. Second kind of person is right now those of us who are currently trying to build a healthy family. And the third is building a family is a lost dream for us, at least the understanding that we have of family, the understanding of I am married and I have 2.5 kids and I have a picket fence and I have a two-car garage. That dream is gone, done, vanished. You may be 50 years old and you might say, sorry, little guys don't swim anymore. However old they are, sorry, I can never do that one. Can you say that in church? I guess I just did. It's a family. How can you have a family series and not understand something like that? There's all different kinds of sectors in all of us here at Crossroads. But one thing all of us have a massive, massive thirst for family. We may be bitter because we don't have the family we want. We may be frustrated because we're not in the family season we want to have. But I will tell you right now, one thing I know is everybody in here has a massive, massive thirst for a healthy family, whatever it looks like, because it is powerful. I ran across this statistic recently that shows how we identify what our personal identity is. And if you take a look at this, the options of family, being an American, our religion, our ethnic group, our state, whatever it is, you see our family far and away gives us the most understanding of our identity more than anything else. It's because there's something powerful, there's something transcendent about the family, and yet the family institution in America is in crisis. It's in massive crisis. Part of the reason why it's a crisis, we have a too limited view of family. When we look at family in the Bible, family wasn't just what your own DNA was. Family was people who lived in your household. Family was friends you were committed to in community. Family was people who you had bonds with that transcended other bonds. And oftentimes we just think of family as it's just the people who are living under my roof who I have the same DNA with. The family is in crisis in our country because we now have the very first generation of Americans who've grown up in a country where the divorce rate is 50%. There's no stress that you will undertake in your life more stressful than divorce. Sociologists have figured this out. Psychologists have figured it out. It's more stressful than actually losing a spouse to death. Because in divorce, there's a severing. There's nothing clean about it. We now have the very first generation in our country that's grown up with divorce being the norm. In fact, if your parents are still together, you're weird. And some of us are never going to have a traditional family structure. And you need to understand, you're not weird because you're in good company. You know who else didn't have a traditional family structure? Jesus. Jesus, that's right. Jesus was never married. He never had his own kids. He never had sex. And he was not subhuman. We think today that unless you're having sex and unless you're married, unless you're this, then somehow you're getting robbed. Hey, Jesus was not robbed. He was God. He had an amazing life. He had the most powerful life the world's ever known. And he had family. We're called his 12 disciples. And there was Mary Magdalene that was in his family as well. And a bunch of other folks. You can have tight family. You can have a significant life if you never have a traditional family structure. You're in good company because you're in the company of Jesus himself.
None of us have an ideal family. None of us do. Probably none of us have the picture of a family that we thought and hoped it would be. And I would say especially we have single parent homes in here, and you just need to understand, man, God is pro your family, massive pro your family. And I believe God gives a special amount of grace to families that aren't traditional, to families in which there's perhaps only one parent, to families where there's unique tensions. You need to understand this. Even if your situation isn't ideal for you, grace from God is there in your family, and what your child or what your kids are involved in, even if it's a broken home, is a broken home, is the best thing they'll ever be a part of. Being with people who are in committed bonds and will be there forever, beyond the next soccer season, beyond graduation, is an amazing blessing. You are blessing your child in the structure they're in right now. Confucius had a fascinating quote. Confucius says, "The strength of a nation derives from the integrity of the home." The strength of a nation derives from the integrity of the home. That's an ancient truth, and it is a absolute truth, every culture, all time. Also, Confucius say, "He who go to bed with itchy bum, wake up with smelly finger." I don't care who you are, it's funny right there. That's really funny. who's never heard that before? I'm just curious, who's never heard that before? That's good. Yeah. Everyone's finally taking notes right now. Maybe this is why family is a dominant metaphor all throughout the Bible. Maybe this is why we are so rocked when certain couples break up, because our sense of reality has kind of come crashing down. I don't know if you've heard recently, Channing Tatum and Jenna Dewan have, I think I said her last name right, they have broken up. They have divorced, and when they announced that a few weeks ago, the Twitterverse was just coming utterly unglued. Danny Pellegrino says, "Well, I know it's not about me, but the Channing Tatum, Jenna Dewan breakup news is devastating, and I can't handle it right now." Twitter user Tammy said, "I officially don't believe in love anymore," and she added another tweet saying, "April is officially canceled." What is this? What is this about us that we're so rocked by? Is it that we have a celebrity-obsessed culture in America? Maybe, but what's happening here is we're hurting whenever we see a family that's torn apart, and especially when we see one that we thought was going to stay together. Jesus elevated family for all of us, but he elevates it beyond just DNA. One day he's teaching, and his DNA family comes around him, his mother, his brothers, and they want to get his attention, have him stop doing what he's doing, which is his ministry at that moment. And they send word to stop him doing what he's doing and have him come be with them. And when they interrupt him, he's kind of offended that his DNA family is doing something they shouldn't be doing, interrupting him when he's in the zone. And he decides to riff on another topic. He says this in Matthew, Mark chapter 3, verse 35. Well, I'll tell you who's my father, who's my mother, who's my brothers. He says, whoever does the will of God, he is my brother and sister and mother. Jesus says, you're not like a brother. He doesn't say you're like a sister. He says, you are. I have tighter family bonds with people who are going after the same God I'm going after than those with many people in my family of origin. There's just a tightness there. There's a bondedness there. There is. And Jesus is talking about this. When you are in relationship with somebody who possesses the same Holy Spirit, God's Spirit inside of you, and you, is committed to the same God that you're committed to, there is a bond there. It's not like family. It is family. It's not like a brother, not like a sister. You are a brother. You are a sister. Family is a massive metaphor. I was had the opportunity recently to be at Google headquarters out in Silicon Valley. Pretty fascinating place. It's one of the lead organizations, businesses in the world, in the history of the world. Crazy what Google is doing. It's, you know, it's only been around for, gosh, what, 20 years, 25 years, something like that. And it is just a driver of culture. Words have been invented, like Google. I'm going to Google that. Didn't know these words not too long ago. And just trying to learn what is it that happens in a culture like that that might be transferable to a church. Because all truth is God's truth. All truth. Aerodynamics, laws of aerodynamics are God's truth. They're not in the Bible, but they're God's truth. So is there anything that's happening there that I or we can learn from? And spend some time interacting with some of their top people. And it was amazing. It really, really was. High quality, just wonderful, wonderful people. One of the people, his name is Andy. He's a CEO of one of their business units called Verily. They went to Alphabet, and their goal is to have a different business for every letter of the alphabet. And they had to do that, I guess, because they were starting to get so dominant that they needed to sort of break up their businesses so that they would not be seen as colluding with one another. And this business, Verily, is where we get the word truth. You know, in the Bible, verily, verily, I say unto thee, is all about looking forward to how do we keep people healthy. And the CEO of this company said, we have doubled the amount of fire trucks that we have. Massive amount of investment in fire truck capability. He said, but we didn't start cutting down house fires until the smoke detector came along. You have all the fire trucks you want, but the smoke detector is what would cut in half the deaths of fire. So the company's vision is not to put out health problems. The company's vision is to prevent health problems or stop health problems before they actually break into a fire. And they have some crazy, crazy stuff. Like they have this contact lens. It's the world's smallest computer. And it goes on your eye. They're working on it right now. It goes on your eye, monitors a bunch of different bodily functions. Your blood sugar, your heartbeat, all kinds of different biometric measures. And it will be able to tell you before you have a major health issue. It'll text your phone through Bluetooth, say, get to the hospital now. And this guy who has mapped the human genome, who's massive degrees from Harvard, all this stuff, he said, I feel really embarrassed talking to you as a pastor because, and I was with some other pastors talking to you as pastors because I spent a lot of money, a lot of money on my education. And Verily has spent a lot of money finding out what makes somebody healthy. And we found out we can tell if somebody's going to be healthy based on two things. Your credit score and your address book. If you are not in massive debt and you have really tight bonds, tight communal bonds, you will be healthy. So he said, shame on me for wasting all the money I did on my education. That's it. That's it right there. What's he saying right there? He's saying, family, if you have tight family bonds, it is the leading indicator of your future physical health. That's your physical health. That's not your mental health. That's not your emotional health. That's not your spiritual health. Your physical health is going to be determined more by your state of family than by what you do with tobacco. But our country is far more comfortable talking about how you shouldn't use tobacco than we are talking about how you should leverage family, because our country has utterly lost the plot. We've become clueless what it means to keep a marriage together, what it means to raise kids of massive character, what it is to have a family that actually functions as a team versus cohabitates under a roof. We are utterly clueless as to what it means to have committed relationships where we love one another, where we bear one another's burdens. We have lost that ability to entirely. We're not able to be vulnerable with our neighbors. We're not able to share our resources with people who are in our community because we have no communal bonds. We have become utterly, utterly devoid of family and communal connections. And because of it, we're all suffering. And because of it, America is in decline in every way thinkable in terms of our own happiness. I want to give you three ideas. We're going to unpack these to different degrees in the rest of our time, but I want to give us three reasons or three elements of what a great family looks like. And I want us to understand that if you're going to build a family, if you're going to build communal bonds, you're going to have some disciplines. And you're going to have some activities that, this might sound gross, but just hear me out. You're going to have some disciplines and some activities that are going to be a bit business-like. When I say business-like, I mean if you're in business, there is an intentionality as to why you do what you do. If you're in social work or if you're in education, whatever it is, there's an intentionality as to why you do what you do. And I just don't see us have the same level of intentionality in the midst of our families. Actually, an early qualification for leadership in the early church, and it still is today, when Crossroads takes a look at a new leader position, we look at this framework. The book of 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 5 says, he must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? God says, if someone's not able to raise healthy children, they're not going to be able to raise spiritual children in a church. A church has business functions. There's a point to it. There's a purpose. And I think in the family, we think that, hey, if I've just got married and I've just had a child and I'm not committing adultery or something like that, then things are going okay. And there's actually a lot more regimented discipline that's needed for leaders in a family, whether you're a mom or a dad, a husband, a wife, whatever you are, or whether you're a community group leader and you're leading with family. There's a few elements that are critical. One element, element number one, is mission. 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 Why does your family exist? Why does it exist? Most families have no idea why they exist. We just exist because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get married, and you're supposed to have kids, and supposed to have them not be drug addicts, and then go get a job someplace. That's what you're supposed to do. No, there's what does it exist for? Why is it there? You might not have a plaque up on the wall that says, our mission as the Schwartz family is to do blank, but blank, but blank, but blank. You could have that. That'd be fine if you did. But you don't have to have that. But you have to know at its core, what is it that your family is trying to accomplish? What is it doing? The Stone family has never had a placard up on the wall. We never have. Never had one of those. But very clear what the mission is. There's a couple of elements of the mission. The first element of the mission is we're trying to get everybody to look more like God. That's the mission. All of us are going to look more like God. It's a critical thing. The book of Joshua chapter 24, verse 15. Joshua, this old hero, he says this, well, if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, well, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your fathers who served in the region beyond the river, these are false gods, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, these are also false gods. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So that's our mission. We're going to serve God. That's who we are. That's what we're going to do. We see families that have missions all throughout the Bible. See Abraham, who starts first of all, we see Adam and Eve. Interesting that God didn't put just two strong men in the Garden of Eden to toil it and start something. No, he didn't choose that. He chose the man and a woman. Why? Because a man and a woman as a family unit and as a team are stronger than two men. We see this in our camps. It was shocking. The very first time we had couples camp. We have man camp, we have woman camp, a couples camp. An element of those camps is a work project. And it was shocking, the very first couples camp, that the amount of work got done was more work, more clearing than the previous man camp we had. This number of people was the same, but more. And you would think, wait a minute, half women, maybe less muscle mass, generally women, but yet more. How that happened? Because there's an element of team. When a man and woman come together, it was crazy. We were all like, oh my gosh, didn't see that one. Should have come and seen it, but I didn't see that coming. Adam and Eve are a team. Abraham and his family, they are a team starting the nation of Israel. Moses bringing the nation of Israel out of slavery later on. He's got a whole family thing around him. He's got his brother Aaron. He's got his father-in-law Jethro who's speaking truth into him saying, you got to start decentralizing. This is going to wipe you out. It's going to stress you out. We see all throughout the Bible, over and over and over again, families who have a mission, families who have a point. The greatest point of our family is to help each of us be more like God. Because we can speak into that, we can help that more so than if we were on our own. I promise you, in your business or whatever sector that you earn money from, I promise you there is strategic thought about the mission that governs choices. And I see shockingly little strategic thought that's governing parenting choices other than my kids want it. Other than, well, that's what John will make Johnny happy. Other than, well, that's what everyone else is doing. We don't say that's what everyone else is doing, but we act in such a way as everyone else is doing. Let me tell you something. If your family is going to be great, get ready to be weird. If your family is going to build great people, and I'm not talking just DNA children, I'm also talking about your family of people you brought into your community. Be prepared to be weird. Because it's only in the weirdness that maturity takes place. Family brings about maturity. It just does. Because family does that to you. Being with somebody in team grows you. It refines you. It shaves things off that only being on your own simply cannot and will not do. It happens over and over again. And I just have a heart for young folks in our country who are just getting told the wrong story. You're being given the wrong information about how to have a great life. It's just wrong. People around us are not building great lives. And yet we're assimilating all their values and all their assumptions of how you do that, and they don't work. Staying single for as long as you can is not an avenue to greatness. It is not. I'll say it again. Staying single for as long as you can is not an avenue to greatness. It's not. One of the best things you can do is find a healthy person to get married to and stay together and build a life because you will have an amazing team. That's what marriage is. It's a team. Marriage is not something that you arrive to. You earn your stripes to. Marriage is something that helps you arrive. I see a bunch of younger males who've been dating somebody for a long, long time. And there's some sense of health in feeling that I've got to have my financial ducks in a row before I kind of get married. There's something healthy about that. There is. A man should want to provide. There's something about that. At the same time, there's something about building a life together. If you want to get ahead financially, get married. Because you will have somebody who's in your life who will help you build a life, not just get out of your own stuff on your own, help you build a life. And you can build something together and you will go far further
You never would. Do not wait. Do not wait until you can afford a wedding ring. Do not get any stinking ring right now. Get one. My wife. I got her a wedding ring and diamond fell out of it, and we didn't have money to get it. Put a diamond back into it. A small diamond anyway. And I haven't seen that ring for years. I don't even know if she even has it. It's gone. I've been through like 4 wedding rings myself. Lost them in river rafting. One got cut off in a basketball accident, and because my finger was swollen. And now I have these $2 rubber rings that are awesome. It's great. And to think of the amount of stress we had over, oh, we have to have the right rings, utterly meaningless and worthless in terms of building a great family. If you can have a great ring, fine. But if you're going to put that ahead of building a great team, you'll regret it. You will. Element number 2 is affection. Element number 2 is affection. Oh, by the way, speaking of element number 1 of having a mission, this is why next week we are not having services in any Crossroads right here locations. Any place where Crossroads sign is, where you can go into, not happening, because we want to be a church on mission that's serving all of our local communities, all of them. When our kids lived in our house, it was amazing to be able to serve at that day with our kids, our family, because our family is serving together. So, hey, hopefully you sign up for Go Local, start this activity. It's going to be amazing. It is. It's going to be amazing, and it's going to help the place where you live, and it's going to help you. If you haven't signed up, you can still do that. But one thing, do not do, don't show up here, because everyone's going to be on mission next week, serving our communities. We love our communities. And we love our families. That is our communal bonds that we have. And we're going to grow together as we're about mission. Second thing that happens is affection. Affection. Mission and affection. Mother Teresa said, what can you do to promote world peace? She said, go home and love your family. Go home and love your family. Divorce grieves the heart of God, not just because it's a moral principle that when it's broken, it's not good. But divorce grieves the heart of God because divorce is a mirroring of who God is. God has complementary parts, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, that come together and fit together. And when men and women, complementary parts, come and fit together in marriage, and they commit to be one, not two individuals who are partners, but to actually be one, it is an image of God. And so when there is a divorce, the reason why it grieves us so much is we now have an image of God that is fractured. It defiles the image of God. It's why it's so grievous, not just for our own psychological and physical and spiritual well-being, but there's something in the image of God that is fractured. And this is why affection in marriage is important, because when we give affection to our families, and I don't mean just our kids, I mean people who we're in our groups with, giving affection to them, it's an important, important bond. Many of us have a hard time referring to God as Father because we didn't have a father figure, or the father figure we did have wasn't affectionate. And we need to break that curse. We need to break that cycle. Where do we ever get the idea that fathers aren't affectionate? Affection is huge. My kids get tired of me hugging on them and kissing on them and rubbing on them and holding their necks. And they do. They're like, Dad, stop. Actually, they do it much less now than they did when they were, 15 or so. But affection is a huge, huge thing. The word love, by the way, is not in any of these 3 markers I'm giving you. I think love is an overused and misunderstood word. All these 3 things are forms of love. But I'm breaking down what love is. Love is when you got a mission, when you're going someplace. Love is when you're affectionate to one another. Whether that's words of affirmation, whether that's hugs, whether that's kisses, whether that's pats on the backs, it's affection. My kids would tell me regularly that their friends in college would say to them things like, "You're kidding. You're going home again? You're spending a weekend with your parents again?" They would regularly go, I can't believe you spend as much time with your parents as you do. I can't believe you want to be away for an entire weekend camping with your parents. I can't believe that you want to. You're, I again, you just did that. Because
they couldn't understand that families would actually enjoy being with each other. It would be fun. There would be laughter. There would be affection. A great family gathering happens when we leave that gathering feeling better than when we came into it. And one of the ways that happens is affection, just loving and blessing. Element number three, maybe the most controversial, but nonetheless the most, a very important one, and maybe the most undervalued. Element three is discipline. So mission, affection, and discipline. We'll give more detail on this one coming up. Discipline. You earn your stripes. You earn your stripes in parenting, making your kids do what they don't want to do. I know it sounds so awful, and you probably don't understand. I'm going to say it again. You earn your stripes in parenting, making your kids do what they don't want to do. What is discipline? Discipline is, and it's been said by all kinds of self-help gurus all over through the ages, discipline is when I do today what I don't want to do so I can do tomorrow what I cannot do. I do today what I don't want to do. I go to the gym today when I don't want to do it so that tomorrow I can do what I currently can't do today. I can lift more weight or I can weigh less, whatever. That's discipline. And it's the same with kids. Parenting is a process of getting your kids to do what they don't want to do. And this is so like crazy and radical in our culture because we believe the role of parents is to have kids do what they want to do. The role of kids is to have kids be free. The role of parents is to have kids be free. The role of parents is to have kids just kind of do their thing. No. We want kids to be free. We want them to do their thing, but they want them to be able to do their thing because they prepare for it, and they don't know what their thing is when they're four. They don't know what their thing is when they're eight. And the thing they think it is when they're 14, they're probably dead wrong. So freedom happens when we prepare them to make the right decisions, have the equipment to follow through on that because we're making them do what they don't want to do right now. In the book of Ephesians chapter 6, it says this, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first command with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Moms and dads can absolutely provoke their kids to anger because we can absolutely want our kids to obey things that are not right. So there's accommodation for that. There is in the Bible. It's not like no matter what, everything a mom or dad does is right. It's not true. I've done a lot of things as a dad that was utterly wrong. I have major regrets with all my kids. Moments where I go, oh man, I wish I could go back and not do that one. I remember my son, we were gathering for some family dinner, extended family, and I was just really trying to get him just in line because he was a spaz. He just was a spaz. Eating dirt out of plants and just, He would take, when I was building our first house, he would come over and try to help me out. He'd take a file, just go around this new house I was building and just take the file and work things over in the house. You know, brand new door. And so he was just a spaz. And so I was in this like phase of trying to like get him into control. And I would overshoot sometimes. I remember one time we were doing this family prayer and he was kissing the hand of his great-grandmother. And I looked at the moment of, oh, this is rebellion. He's not on. And I remember taking him and I spanked him. It's a massive mistake for me. Huge, huge. You know what? He still turned out okay. Spanking wasn't a massive mistake. Spanking in that time was a massive mistake. We've all got it wrong. But I tell you what, if you've got a healthy dose of mission, a healthy dose of affection, and a healthy dose of discipline, it will cover a multitude of mistakes. It just will. We have a very odd family right now, and we had a very odd family growing up. We have a very odd family because we like spending time with each other at 26, 24, 19, and Liv and I won't tell you our ages. Very, very, very odd. And we had a very, very odd things growing up that we did things that other parents thought, no, you can't do that. That's crazy. You can't do that. Like, I see parents passing off their kids as shy. Oh, he's just shy. Leave him alone. She's just shy. No one's allowed to be shy in our house. Sorry, that's called lack of confidence. You need to be able to learn how to go and talk to adults and look them in the eye. Our youngest daughter was talking about how she would be terrified that we would make her go and talk to the person at the restaurant to get our menus. So go get the menus. I don't want to, I'm scared. I'm shy. No, no. You'll go up there. You'll look that woman in the eye, and you'll say, excuse me, can we have 5 menus? Just do that. Can you do that? And she would do that. Do that. When someone comes over to the table, the dinner table, and they're taking your order, you will look them in the eye, and you will tell them what they want. And she was saying, she said, it drives me nuts. I go out with my friends in college at BW3, and like my friends are going, they're not even look at the person. They're not respecting the person who's asking the order, and they're just looking like, oh, I'll take it. We were very, very odd. Very, very odd to be sticklers on that stuff. We were odd, man. Our kids, when they got out of a car, every car, thank you. Thank you. Every time I dropped them off at school, my wife dropped off at school, or a neighbor did, every time, thank you, Mrs. Wells, for dropping us. Thank you. Thank you. It was manners. It was key manners. I don't care if you want to do it or not. You're going to say thank you. I don't care if you want to go talk to, you're going to go talk to that person. And the things that we did and were sticklers on were massive. Why? Because that forms character. That's why. Forms character. I believe my kids get jobs now that other people might not get jobs because they've learned to look people in the face, look people in the eye, and speak to them respectfully. And they didn't want to do it when they were 4, but I made them do it. And they're on their way and doing amazing stuff right now. I was thinking about this just this last week, recently. I went to this motorcycle rally, and I stayed at this place where I was hanging out. There was another campsite kind of close to me. And that campsite had 2 good old boys. They're people from Alabama. And so we went and had a fire with them one night, and they were good old boys. Like, you talk like this, and that's just the way they talk, just like this. And the one guy worked at the Polaris factory. He was a welder, and he was telling me about how his job of welding the cage together for these Polaris razors and everything like that. And when I would ask him something, he kept saying, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I said, so you work in the factory? Yes, sir. Yes, I do. Yes, sir. I mean, he would just tell us everything was, yes, sir. Yeah, it was just so endearing. I would say, hey, do you mind if I have one of your hot dogs? He says, yes, sir. Yes, sir. You can have one. Everything was yes, sir. I'm going like, dude, you're not my child. First, it was like really weird, but it was very endearing. Let me tell you what. His parents drilled into him saying, yes, sir. And I'll tell you what. If there's ever layoffs at the Polaris plant, he'll be last. He'll be last because his supervisor knows who he is, and he knows his manners, and it will impact his future. Where we're going to go from here, maybe the most important thing that you wrestle with, and maybe the most important blessing to your kids, just may be. At the same rally where I was, I recognize that there's people who I used to ride with who are getting better than me and are better than me riding. And I also recognize another thing. It seemed like the people who were the greatest riders and have had the most adventures also had the most shallow families. We can't have it all. We can't be the best in all these different fields. We can't have the best savings. We can't have the best serenity in life and have the best families. If you're going to have a family, you're going to spend money on it. You're not going to have great savings. If you're going to have a family, there's going to be fun things other people are doing that you're not going to do. And I'll tell you this, having lived this life, I used to believe when I was younger and I was making the sacrifices I was making in the family, I used to feel like I was getting ripped off, like I was somehow losing part of my life. And I'm telling you right now, like, oh no, I was building up a massive bank of happiness. I was building up a massive bank of capital that's helping me and our family have massive, massive treasure today. Do not fall prey to the belief that you got to put off family and you got to devalue it. It is where your greatest treasure on this earth will be. Greatest treasure on this earth will be. And that's why we're doing this series. And I want the best for you and your family. Whatever your family looks like, whatever state of existence it's in right now. Let me pray for you. God, thank you for the blessing of family and how you've created it to help us and to build into us. And I just pray for every family that's in earshot and eyeshot of me right now that it would get better, that it would get stronger, that it would be more aligned with your ways and purposes and would bring us the peace and some of the fulfillment that no other relationships in this earth will bring us. And I pray these things according to your name, Jesus. Amen.